This is 88.1 WYPR, Baltimore's NPR news station, Community Amplified.
So in Maryland, as you probably saw, they had 500,000 mail-in votes that were corrupt.
What did happen with Maryland's mail-in ballots? I'm News Director Matt Bush, and this is WYPR's News Roundup. Today, we're chasing down ballots and candidates. First up, in Baltimore, Bobby LePin challenges Senate President Bill Ferguson.
We're simply asking that in a representative democracy, which is what we live in, that the Senate President not use his power like a king.
My neighbors, the people that I live near and around, believe I've done a good job.
Then we head to Western Maryland's 6th Congressional District. Plus, we pass the mic to a political reporter in Maryland and find out more about faculty layoffs at Bowie State University. That's all coming up. And good afternoon and welcome to the WYPR News Roundup. I'm Matt Bush, news director of our award-winning newsroom. We're going to add some more of those this weekend at the Chesapeake AP Convention in Ocean City. We'll tell you all about that next week. But this week, we're talking about ballots. The state of Maryland resent hundreds of thousands of ballots to voters this week. Maybe you got a postcard about it or a second ballot marked replacement. We're going to be talking about that in just a minute. Then we'll get into some of the elections that voters will be deciding in next month's primary. State Senate President Bill Ferguson has some election competition from a newcomer here in Baltimore, Bobby LePin. WYPR Sarah Petrowich has had her eye on that race and will be here to talk about it. We'll also hear from our Frederick reporter, Nathaniel Miller. The 6th Congressional District in Western Maryland has a very competitive Democratic primary between the incumbent and the man she replaced. Then we pass the mic to a political reporter here in Maryland. And finally, we head to Bowie State, where some state senators have been showing up on campus. Why is that? All that coming up. But first, we have Jared DeMoranis on the line. He is the state administrator of elections here in Maryland. We're going to bring you the truth and none of the garbage about all these mail-in ballot problems. Jared, thanks for coming back onto the show.
Thank you for having me. And there's a lot of garbage out there.
Well, we're going to focus on the truth here this afternoon. Yes. So tell us how this happened. First off, these ballots that were incorrectly mailed to people. The state of Maryland contracted with a vendor, which is part of the Taylor Corporation, a Minnesota company. And it sounded like they notified you all of the problem.
So actually, when ballots were actually hitting mailboxes on May 14th, some voters had received the wrong party ballot for the primary election and called the local boards of election, which is, you know, great because that's what we want. At that point there, that's when we called Taylor, the mail-in vendor for this. And that's when we did, you know, a thorough investigation as to the extent of the problem. The problem basically was that some voters were receiving the wrong party ballot because at the time of inserting the ballot packet into the envelope, the coding was dropped. And the one problem was that the vendor could not accurately identify the affected voters. So as a result, we had to reissue ballots to all the potentially affected voters, which was over 440,000 of individuals. But we know that the actual problem of people receiving, you know, the wrong party ballot style is far, far less. So the majority of individuals would have received the correct party ballot style for this election.
So for people who are receiving these postcards that say about something about the problem and then a replacement ballot, this is a direct question for my girlfriend because she's facing this. What do you do with the first ballot you received once you receive the postcard saying you may or may not have received the right ballot?
So basically, you can discard that first ballot if you have it in possession, because we have mailed, you know, your girlfriend a replacement ballot, which we know is 100% guaranteed the correct party ballot for her and for every individual at that point who has requested it. So, you know, we wanted to make sure, because we could not accurately identify the affected voters, we then mailed out replacement ballots to all the potentially affected voters.
I got you the answer there, dearest. Now, President Trump caught the attention of this foul up with the ballots, and this is what he had to say.
So in Maryland, as you probably saw, they had 500,000 mail-in votes that were corrupt. They were corrupt. They said the printer made a mistake. Don't believe that.
and they got caught with 500,000 mail-in ballots that were corrupt. We've got to stop it. We have a country that has a very corrupt... We have more corrupt elections than third world countries have. And we ought to get smart. Pass the Save America Act. That'll be a long way. Yeah, voter ID, voter identification.
Now, not a lot of truth in that statement, but you have pushback coming from a Republican president and some GOP politicians in the state of Maryland that have used election fallibility as a political tool in the past. There's all this talk on social media. Much of it is not something we can say on the radio, but let's go to you. How are you fighting back against the misinformation machine this time?
Well, I'm on social media pushing back as much as possible with the correct information. It bears repeating, I've said this on my posts many a times too, that there is no fake or illegal mail-in ballots that were distributed. Mail-in voting is legal. It has been a part of Maryland's constitution since 1919 in one form or another. We've, as a country, have used mail-in or absentee voting since the Civil War days. So that's how long this has been a part of our processes in elections. I think that the wording from the president, creates this atmosphere of misinformation on a voting right, and it has the potential to go viral and give basically inaccurate information across the board. But Maryland, mail-in voting is a very legal process. It is a safe and secure process. We have lots of safeguards to ensure that only one ballot is counted. We track these mail-in ballots from when they leave the vendor to your mailbox. And if you put them back into the mail stream, we track it from when you put it into that mailbox all the way to the local board of elections, at which point here we notify the voter when we're mailing out the ballots to you. We've told you when we've received the ballots. We've also tell you when they get counted. So this entire process is open and transparent. Even the canvas themselves of mail-in ballots is an open and transparent process. So, there's nothing about this that is illegal or fraudulent, fake. These are tried and true processes and very much legal and safe and secure.
Okay, so everyone who's requested the ballot, a mail-in ballot so far, now has the right one.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. So now we have some deadlines coming up here for people. The first one's Tuesday, and that's a very important one, particularly for people who want to vote by mail. Tell us what Tuesday's deadline is.
So June 2nd is the deadline for advanced voter registration, but it's also important to know that that's also the ability for individuals who are registered voters to change their party affiliation. Maryland is a closed primary state. So that means that you have to be a Democrat to vote in the Democratic primary election, a Republican to vote in the Republican primary election. If you're an unaffiliated voter, you can only vote for school board elections, which are nonpartisan elections. You cannot vote in the other two primaries. If you want to vote in those primaries, you have to change your party affiliation, and that deadline is June 2nd. It's very easy. You can download our app. And update your voter registration that way. You can go to our website and update your voter registration. That makes it the fastest method that we have.
June 11th through the 18th is the early voting period. If you are not registered to vote right now and miss this June 2nd deadline, you can register to vote. But this is only for people who aren't registered to vote during the early voting period, correct?
Exactly. That's an important distinction so if you're not a registered voter at all, you can go and do same day voter registration at an early voting center or at a polling place. But you cannot be a registered voter at all. If you're an unaffiliated voter and you want to go an early vote or go on primary day, you would not be able to be eligible to switch your party affiliation at that point.
And then the primary itself is on June 23rd with polls open from 7 in the morning to 8 at night. And then then the counting begins. One thing, speaking of the primary day itself, one thing a lot of media have been covering, but a great story in Wired this month about election officials that they're getting ready for ICE to show up at the polls. You were one of the people they talked to in that story. So what are you guys doing to prepare should ICE show up at the polls, and what can be done by the state?
So we prepare, we have tabletop exercises. We prepare all sorts of contingencies out there. You know, we are in touch with the Office of the Attorney General. You know, we just want to make sure that, you know, voting is a sacred right and that no one should feel any fear or intimidation in attempting to cast their ballot in person. So, you know, we're aware of the situation and, you know, have taken necessary steps to make sure that voting is, you know, unfettered in the state of Maryland.
Now, that article did mention some of the exercises. You probably can't go into the full details, but one of those exercises that apparently you go through is one where you're arrested. Can you tell us anything about that?
Well, there was an executive order about mail-in voting about, you know, certain things that did threaten the arrest of election officials. So, you know, when you do mail-in, when you do tabletop exercises, you always go to a lot of extremes. And so, yes, one of them was having me being arrested on one of them. So, you know, there's always contingencies at that point as well. So hopefully it won't come to that because I don't want to get arrested.
So what can voters do? We're talking about what you all can do. What can voters do if they see anything going on at the polls? And what should they know about their rights?
So basically, you know, Maryland, you know, no one should interfere with you in the 100-foot zone. When you're casting your ballot, that's a no electioneering zone. You know, if you see any presence that you feel is, you know, threatening or intimidating, you know, we have, of course, you know, the ability to lodge in complaints on our website. That's why the app is also very good, because you can just put it in right there for us. We have, I think the Attorney General will have a hotline, and, you know, we always have a call center as well for any issues that arise, and we're ready to, you know, rapidly respond to them. Because, you know, the one thing about voting is this, you know, if a person walks away or anything like that, there is no do-overs. There's no like, oh, the election is over, but now we'll let you do a makeup here. So, you know, it's very important that you have to persevere and make sure that you make your voices heard.
And just very quickly, again, if ICE is out there looking for undocumented people, what are the rights of undocumented people to vote in the state of Maryland? And
well,
in the United States.
You have to be a U.S. citizen
right.
to vote. So, yes. So I just want to make sure that, you know, you have to be a U.S. citizen. You have to be a registered voter to vote in the state of Maryland. So, you know, and you basically that's the key to this here.
Something to be said constantly as we get into election yes. season. Jared DeMarinis is the state administrator of elections for Maryland. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Coming up next, we'll talk to our reporter Sarah Petrowich about a challenge to Maryland State Senate President Bill Ferguson right here in the city of Baltimore, plus how redistricting is folding into that race. I'm Matt Bush, and you're listening to WYPR's Friday News Roundup. Stay with us after this short break.
Good afternoon. You are listening to WYPR, Baltimore's NPR news station at 88.1, where support comes from Towson University, presenting On the Mark, a podcast about what's happening around campus. On the latest episode, Towson University President Dr. Mark Ginsburg explores how educators are creating more inclusive spaces and expanding opportunities for students with disabilities, available on the WYPR app and wherever you stream your podcast.
Maryland's largest free outdoor concert series, WTMD's First Thursdays, returns to Canton Waterfront Park June 4th with fantastic tunes from New York's Fantastic Cat. Plus for Mississippi, Happy Landing, and Baltimore's Seven Teller.
What are the chances I would see you here tonight?
Add in local food and drink artisans and community organizations in the Vendor Village, made possible by CFG Bank and Baltimore Public Media. Find all details at WTMD.org.
Farmers, landscapers, and the hospitality industry have long complained the U.S. government doesn't issue enough guest worker visas to meet seasonal labor needs.
We've tried hiring temp workers, local workers. We have had very little success. Local workers don't want these jobs.
I'm Scott Detrow. How worker shortages have upended Louisiana's crawfish industry on the next All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered comes your way this afternoon at 4 here on WIPR, Baltimore's NPR News Station.
And And welcome back. You're listening to WIPR's News Roundup, our weekly show examining some of the big issues facing Baltimore and our region. The city is home to one of the most watched primary elections in Maryland this year. The 46th district includes South Baltimore, the Peninsula, Fells Point, and Patterson Park. Senate President Bill Ferguson has represented it for four terms, but for the first time as an incumbent, he faces a viable opponent in next month's Democratic primary. Bobby LePin, better known as Captain Bobby, is challenging Ferguson, and the race has intertwined so many issues facing Democrats this year. That includes congressional redistricting, which reared its head again last week. Joining me now is the reporter who broke that story, WIPR's own Sarah Petrowich. She's in studio with us. She covers state politics in the State House. Sarah, thanks for coming back.
Hey, thanks so much.
The General Assembly did not approve anything regarding redistricting by the time it adjourned in April. Senate President Bill Ferguson was the biggest reason for that. So
it would have been a lot easier to just pass a map, take the applause, and then know that the court was going to throw it out. But the thing is, I've been through this before. And when I went through it in 21, I'll never forget, we did everything right. And the court, the unpredictable court, threw the case out.
That clip is from the lone sit-down interview he has done in the election cycle, and that was with you. So why is he having new thoughts?
Yeah, so just as a reminder, as always, there's so many details with redistricting at this point, but we got here starting last summer when President Trump called on Republican-led Texas to redraw its congressional maps to favor Republicans. Ever since then, we've seen this nationwide arms race between Democratic and Republican-controlled states on who can redraw their maps to better favor their party. So Maryland entered that race slightly this General Assembly, as you mentioned. The House passed a map that would have given Democrats a one-seat edge in the House. Potentially, Maryland currently has a map that is 7 Democrats and 1 Republican. This would make it 8-0. But Ferguson held up that map in the Senate. He's largely addressed legal concerns with that over the state constitution, which we'll dive into in just a second. But now he is interested in creating a path forward with a new interpretation from the U.S. Supreme Court on the Federal Voting Rights Act, which we're also about to dive into here in a minute.
Right. So we're going to talk about the state constitution first. So he's looking at doing this. It's possible that they're going to do a legislative session after the election to deal with this, but this is going to deal with what the state constitution says. So why is that so important?
Exactly. Yeah. So as we heard Ferguson talk about in that bite, this started with a map that was drawn in 2021 that also would have given Democrats a similar edge here. An 8-0 map is what we're calling it. There was a 2022 legal decision from an appeals judge in Maryland where she referenced this part of the state constitution that says each, quote, legislative district must be compact, consist of adjoining territories, and respect political subdivisions. So there's this divide over if legislative districts applies to state legislative districts, congressional districts, or both. And so at this point, with that judge's interpretation, she says that congressional districts do have to be compact and respect political subdivisions. So Ferguson wants to change that to make sure that that only applies to state legislative districts, essentially legalizing political gerrymandering.
And that would be on the ballot should the General Assembly reconvene and approve it. That would be on the ballot in the fall general election. Now, the U.S. Supreme Court certainly played a role in Ferguson's changing on this, or his new thoughts, I guess, maybe not changing, but his new plans. Which two rulings affected him?
Yeah, so the biggest one is this recent decision from the U.S. Supreme Court that essentially gutted Section 2 of the Federal Voting Rights Act. So this now creates a higher legal threshold for when minority populations want to challenge a map they believe is racially discriminatory. And this has opened up the door for southern states who previously had drawn lines to ensure communities of color could elect their preferred candidate to now redraw their maps in a way that will likely oust these black elected leaders. And this is being updated by the hour. We literally just saw news from Louisiana. This did happen where they drew out a black elected leader from their district. So Ferguson is concerned about that. And that's one of the reasons why he thinks that Democrats need an edge going into Congress. But he's also worried that an 8-0 map could dilute black leadership in Maryland. So those are two juxtapositions that we'll have to keep an eye on. And you did mention there was another court decision. I mean, we're seeing these constantly, but one of the biggest ones was out of Virginia where they were going to pass a map that was in Democrats' favor. But a court struck it down because they said that there were procedural errors in how it was placed on the ballot. And Ferguson has pointed to this as further reason as to why it's so important to be methodical about how Maryland carries out its plan.
So this is a campaign issue in the 46th between Ferguson and his opponent, Bobby LePin. Let's hear what Ferguson has to say and then LePin.
When you see another party that's trying to take away American freedoms, you can't just sit down and sit back and allow it to happen. You have to make active changes to prevent the collapse of American democracy. and that requires redistricting.
So that was a misreading on my part, but that was Bobby Lapin. We had already heard from Bill Ferguson about this. So what's being discussed on the campaign trail about this issue?
Yeah, absolutely. So some Democrats are really frustrated with Ferguson. National Democrats locally, Governor Wes Moore is as well. He pulled his endorsement, which we might talk about a little bit later. But Lapin has been in favor of redistricting since November. This is when Maryland really entered the redistricting race. He testified at these governor constituted redistricting advisory commission meetings, saying that this was important for Maryland to do so, to fight back against the Trump administration. And he's really targeted Ferguson because of his viewpoints on this and holding up this map. Lapin really believes that this is something Maryland should do, and he's using it as one of his campaign strategies. But I will note that I went door knocking with Ferguson, and out of the tens of 20s of doors that we knocked on, I did only hear one constituent bring up redistricting. So there might be a little bit of a gap here as far as how much do members of the 46th district actually care about this and how much of this is going on at a higher political elected leader level.
We've now heard what he thinks about redistricting in Maryland. But who is Bobby Lapin to begin with?
Yeah, Captain Bobby is a veteran, former teacher, and local sailboat charter owner. He positions himself as a more progressive candidate than Ferguson, but he also says to him that this race is about the working class versus corporate interests. And he really is going after Ferguson as being someone who is working on behalf of corporations.
Social media is a big part of his campaign because financially and what he's been able to raise, he's far behind on that. So how is using social media to reach voters?
Yeah, Lapin has 150,000 followers across Instagram and TikTok. A lot of those are him on the scene in his classic hoodies, flip-flops, his military Orioles hat. They're talking head videos where he's discussing problems that he sees in the community. He's talking to members of the community, and he's really taking a lot of direct shots at Ferguson, particularly his voting record in the General Assembly, and calling out even some of his campaign strategies, pointing at Ferguson's signs, the money that he's spending on those signs, a lot of populist things like that.
So you went door knocking with Ferguson as part of the story to hear what constituents were saying. It wasn't redistricting, you said. What were they talking to him about?
Yeah, affordability. If that is not a word that we have heard here in Maryland and across the country, that is absolutely those constituents' focuses. They're talking about affordability, utility bills in particular, housing problems, affording child care. But Bill Ferguson was really able to point to his track record in recently voting for bills that would help address those problems. So that is an advantage that he has over Lapin, that he can cite his voting record. Although Lapin often argues that Ferguson was more progressive this year, but has stalled on bills similar to those in years past.
And felt that, if you please go read Sarah's story that's on our website right now, WIPR.org, felt that basically the pressure from the election was forcing Ferguson to pass more progressive things.
Absolutely.
All right. So fundraising is important in so many things, but really on a local level, it buys you so much that you can do. And there is a vast gap in the fundraising in this particular race. So we're going to hear about that right now. First, we're going to hear from Bobby Lapin about Bill Ferguson's fundraising.
As Senate President, Bill Ferguson takes $25,000 each year from BGE, Washington Gas and Light, health insurance companies to include United Healthcare. It's crazy to think that that money doesn't influence the decisions made in the General Assembly.
But Ferguson does defend himself.
If somebody believes that they will take a contribution and that will dictate their outcome of their vote, they should not run for office.
So who's taking what money and from where? And what are they saying about it?
Yeah, Ferguson has nearly $1 million in his campaign chest as of May 19th, with an additional almost $600,000 sitting in the Democratic Senate Caucus Committee's account that he could also tap into. So that's a lot of money there. And Lapin's account sits at just under $60,000. And Ferguson has spent over $350,000 in this race, while Lapin has spent around $70,000. So we're seeing large gaps in numbers here. And one of the important notes is that Lapin is not taking donations from corporate PACs or developers, and accuses Ferguson's campaign of being fueled by big money and special interests, as we heard in that clip. So money does have a lot to do with this race. It is hard to say, though, if Ferguson will still reap the benefits of having more money to spend, or if Lapin is going to come out a winner as someone who's decided to focus on integrity and not taking money from these big developers.
Another thing that can drive out voters or potentially help particular candidates, and something certainly we in the media talk about quite a bit, is endorsements. Now, you were able to talk to the Senate president about this non-endorsement he got from Governor Wes Moore, that caused some certainly some eyebrows when Governor Moore's list of endorsements came out earlier this month. Remind us of what happened there and what the Senate president told you in your interview.
Yeah, absolutely. Those list of endorsements were released. And yes, as we've just said, it was glaringly absent of Senate President Bill Ferguson's name. And that list was also released just days after Ferguson attended Moore's campaign relaunch event. And so there was discussion at the time on if there was a mutual endorsement between the two or not. And then Ferguson told that to me on my interview. He said that there was an agreement about a mutual endorsement, and him and the governor just have simply disagreed on redistricting. But he says that he still endorses the governor, and he feels that he is the best path forward for Maryland to continue as leading the old line state.
Sarah Petrowich is WIPR's State House and State Politics reporter, and she's here to break down. Please go read her story and listen to it if you haven't yet on our website, WIPR.org. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, we're going to head to Western Maryland to talk about the 6th Congressional District Democratic primary out there, where there are a lot of money being spent. Then we pass the mic to another politics reporter here in Maryland who talks about covering the news even when it's tough. And we find out why some state senators are taking a look at Bowie State after 79 positions were laid off there. That's all coming up after this break. Stay with us. This is the WIPR News Roundup, and I'm Matt Bush.
Practical Parenting, the new podcast from GBMC, helps empower parents in the trenches to find joy in the process and thrive through it all. The goal? To ensure parents have the resources, support, and confidence they need. Practical Parenting from GBMC, available on WYPR.org, the mobile app, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Is classical music just not for you? Well, maybe it's time to be classical curious. Join us Saturday, June 27th at Maryland Hall in Annapolis as WIPR and the Columbia Orchestra present classical music for people with short attention spans, an engaging, humorous, fast-paced concert experience for both newcomers and seasoned listeners. Enjoy a lively program of short works from across the classical repertoire hosted by WIPR's Taylor Holbrooks. Two shows, 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. Tickets and more info at WIPR.org.
Maybe I can train this cat to hear a knock and then hit a button that makes the sound of a dog bark, or train it to launch itself at the heads of intruders.
Join us for stories of missions improbable. Sometimes those missions are accomplished, sometimes not. That's on the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
You can listen to the Moth Radio Hour right here on WIPR every Saturday at 2 in the afternoon. This is 88.1.
And welcome back to WYPR's News Roundup. I'm Matt Bush, news director of our award-winning newsroom. The Democratic primary in the 6th Congressional District in Maryland out west is shaping up to be a bellwether of how the party's voters view any bipartisanship with the second Trump administration. Incumbent April McLean Delaney is fighting for a second term against the man she succeeded in office, David Trone, who's running again after failing to secure the Democratic nomination for U.S. Senate 2 years ago. Both candidates are very wealthy, and they line up on many issues, but there are differences on one, and it plays into both national and local politics. Joining us now to discuss more is WIPR's Nathaniel Miller. He covers Frederick for our newsroom. Nathaniel, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So first, we'll start here. Give us the background on both of these candidates, and why are they so wealthy?
So April McLean Delaney is actually the current holder of Maryland's 6th District seat. She took that seat in 2024 when Trone ran for Senate. Now, most of her funding does come from her own personal wealth. However, AIPAC and Forbright Bank, which is owned by her husband, are her two largest donors. Now, her husband is former U.S. Representative John Delaney. He held the Maryland 6th District seat from 2013 to 2019 and stepped down to run for president in 2020. His funding comes from a long career as a businessman owning and selling multiple businesses. Trone held the seat from 2019 to 2025 after John Delaney and before April McLean Delaney. And his big claim is that he is largely self-funded. Mm-hmm. He originally supported Delaney, but supported Delaney in an effort to try and keep the seat away from Republicans. His funding comes from his ownership of Total Wine and More, the largest wine and spirit retailer in the U.S.
So describe to us a bit of the district again. This is one that's been drawn several times during this century in Maryland, but right now it contains the western part of Maryland. So just go over just the geographic boundaries of the district real briefly.
Yeah, so the largest county in the district is Montgomery County, and Germantown is its biggest community. However, it should be noted that Frederick County is also the fastest growing in the state, and it also boasts the fastest growing city as well as school district. Now, much of the 6th District is forests, mountains, and farmland, but it needs to be recognized a substantial portion is also suburban and urban development.
Now, within all that rural part of this district is a planned ICE detention facility that we've been covering pretty much the whole year. Remind us of what that is and its status at the moment.
So it is an 800,000-square-foot warehouse off of I-70, just a warehouse. ICE bought it in January for more than $100 million. Now, they plan to renovate it into a multi-state immigration enforcement hub. The plan is to hold more than 1,500 detainees at a time. The conflict arises in that residents don't want to see immigrants kept in a warehouse, with the concerns coming from the other living conditions seen in other ICE detention centers across the country. The nearby town of Williamsport has approximately 2,000 residents inside, and many of the locals are really worried that putting that many people in a building not designed to house people is going to put a big strain on the plumbing. Now, the project is frozen due to multiple federal actions, the primary one being a lawsuit filed by Maryland Attorney General Anthony Brown, who alleges that the DHS skipped an important environmental review.
So this is something that's really big in that district. So immigration really matters in the 6th. And this is where these candidates have some differences. We're going to start with the Lake and Riley Act. What is that?
So the Lake and Riley Act was from 2024. A 22-year-old Lake and Riley was sexually assaulted and murdered by an undocumented Venezuelan national. The goal of the act is that if an undocumented immigrant is arrested, then they can be detained for the duration of their immigration case. And that means that they can't appeal to a judge to be let go. Now, the conflict here is laws on mandatory detention have already existed for years, but those required a conviction. This one required just an arrest.
So Delaney voted for this, one of her first votes as a congresswoman. We'll hear why right now.
If you look at Lake and Riley, a woman was taken, tortured, killed by someone illegally here. And I do believe if you kill and maim people, yes, you should be deported, but also prosecuted.
And David Trone called Delaney out for that vote.
Your job is to know what you're doing. We had two other freshman congressmen, and a woman, Sarah Helfrich and Johnny O, both voted against the Lake and Riley Act. They were both new people.
So this is really what got Trone into the race. So tell us more about the candidate's position on this particular bill.
So Delaney argues that she doesn't want any woman to be sexually assaulted or murdered, and she does stand by if you are an immigrant and you do either of those things, you should be deported. For her, at the time, it was a common sense vote. She even points to the 45 other Democrats who voted with her. Now, in contrast to that, she says that vote was held within the first few weeks of her term and argues she never would have voted that way if she knew what ICE would become. She doesn't think her career should be determined by a single vote. Now, Trone does say it was Delaney's job to know better. And at this point, he says he can't even recognize the woman that he used to support. He alleges that 22% of Delaney's votes have gone with MAGA since she was elected, and that she's not effectively standing with Democrats.
Go check out Nathaniel Stern on our website, WYPR.org. He got into a whole lot more on this immigration issue with both of these candidates. But given the sort of stature here and given how this looks in the Democratic Party to have PASA having an incumbent facing the person she succeeded, that's certainly going to be a big bellwether of where Democrats kind of stand on their votes, at least voters stand with some of these issues that are being discussed in this election cycle. Nathaniel Miller, he's our terrific reporter who covers Frederick. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you very much.
After a quick break, we're going to pass the mic to another political reporter here in Maryland. And then we'll head to Bowie State University, where recent layoffs have gotten some political attention. This is WYPR's News Roundup. Stay with us.
Maryland's largest free outdoor concert series, WTMD's First Thursdays, returns to Canton Waterfront Park June 4th with fantastic tunes from New York's Fantastic Cats. plus for Mississippi, Happy Landing, and Baltimore's Seven Teller.
What are the chances I would see you here tonight?
Add in local food and drink artisans and community organizations in the Vendor Village, made possible by CFG Bank and Baltimore Public Media. Find all details at WTMD.org.
Check out the latest episode of Your Child's Brain, a podcast series produced by Kennedy Krieger Institute with assistance from WIPR. I'm Dr. Brad Schlager, president and CEO of Kennedy Krieger Institute. Join me and my guest, Dr. Brenda Banwell, as we discuss exciting advances and current challenges in the field of pediatric neurology. That's Your Child's Brain, available on the first Thursday of every month at WIPR.org, KennedyKrieger.org/YCB, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Between AI and social media and misinformation, it's good to be skeptical of what you hear. On Morning Edition from NPR News, you get independent reporting.
And tell us what NPR has learned about these back-channel efforts from countries.
Driven by curiosity, not an agenda.
Oh, that part is news to me. What's going on here?
Get the facts every weekday.
Morning Edition comes your way Monday through Friday here on Baltimore's NPR news station, WIPR, at 88.1.
And welcome back to the Friday News Roundup. I'm Matt Bush. Now it's time to pass the mic to Osita Nwanevu. It's no secret that many people feel exhausted by the news and today's political climate. Here, Nwanevu gives us perspective on why it's important to stay connected when it can get overwhelming.
Pass the Mic is made possible by a grant from the T. Rowe Price Foundation, recognizing 45 years of advancing thriving communities and building financial well-being. The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the participants and do not reflect the views of the T. Rowe Price Foundation, T. Rowe Price, or any of their subsidiaries or affiliates.
Pass the mic.
Hand that to me.
Pass it over here.
Pass the mic.
Pass the mic, a community-driven radio show that gives you the space to share your stories, your issues, and your concerns your way. This week, we pass the mic to journalist and author Osita Nwanevu, who writes about politics and democracy.
Pass the mic.
My name is Osita Nwanevu, and I'm a political journalist. I am a contributing editor at The New Republic and a columnist at The Guardian. And I cover American politics. That's all aspects of American politics, from elections through policy issues and political culture. I've always been interested in politics from a very young age. I can remember watching the news when I was a very small child or a toddler. And that's just kind of how I grew up. It was always a subject at the dining table. I've been a listener of NPR for many years. I was an intern at NPR, actually. That was one of my first jobs in journalism. So public radio has always been very important to me. My latest and actually first book, The Right of the People, came out in August 2025, and it's a book about democracy. Obviously, that's been a topic of much discussion in American politics over the last few years, and I wanted to take the opportunity to explore what democracy really meant, to think about it philosophically, and to see whether that philosophical understanding of what democracy means could help me think through some of our political challenges and economic challenges. I think there are a lot of people right now who feel like they want to walk away from politics, who feel that things are too depressing, too chaotic. I feel this way sometimes as somebody whose job it is to follow politics all the time. It does weigh upon you. You know, the famous cliche is that if you don't make political choices, those choices will be made for you. If you don't engage in politics, politics still happens to you. These have been very challenging years to be a journalist of any kind, especially a political journalist, and especially a political journalist who is as openly opinionated, let's say, as I tend to be. But that hasn't really diminished my resolve to do the work. If anything, I think that this political moment and this climate has made it all the more important for people to speak honestly and truthfully about the things that are going on, the things that they think are wrong, and the ways we can improve as a society. I've lived in Baltimore for going on 7 years now. And although most of my writing is about national politics, I do see the ways in which the inequities of national politics really do impact Baltimore and cities like Baltimore across the country. The fact that we don't have federal investments to reduce poverty or to make housing more affordable or to improve our transit. And we're always trying to figure this stuff out on our own. Even though we have a pretty wealthy country, there's no reason why we have some of the problems that we have in this city. Or at the very least, the extent that we have them, there's no reason we have to face them alone. This is a part of America. America is not just the heartland. America is not just the swing states. People here have rights and they have dignity and have the political power to bring resources to this city. I'm Osita Nwanevu. I'm a political journalist. And please listen to me on an upcoming episode of Pass the Mic.
Pass the Mic is produced by executive producer Amy Walters, senior producer Mallory Pinkard-Pierre, and producer Elizabeth Nonemaker. This is a presentation of Baltimore Public Media.
To learn more about Pass the Mic, visit WYPR.org. You can also follow and subscribe to Pass the Mic wherever you get podcasts. After the break, we break down what's happened with recent layoffs at Bowie State. I'm Matt Bush, and this is WYPR's News Roundup. Stay with us.
You are listening to WYPR, Baltimore's NPR news station at 88.1 and media partner for the Seed School of Maryland's fifth annual Run Up to Juneteenth 5K and 1 mile walk, Sunday, June 14th at Druid Hill Park, kicking off Baltimore's AFRAM Festival Week. Registration information at seedschoolmaryland.org.
Is classical music just not for you? Well, maybe it's time to be classical curious. Join us Saturday, June 27th at Maryland Hall in Annapolis as WYPR and the Columbia Orchestra present classical music for people with short attention spans, an engaging, humorous, fast-paced concert experience for both newcomers and seasoned listeners. Enjoy a lively program of short works from across the classical repertoire hosted by WYPR's Taylor Holbrooks. Two shows, 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. Tickets and more info at WYPR.org.
Practical Parenting, the new podcast from GBMC, helps empower parents in the trenches to find joy in the process and thrive through it all. The goal? To ensure parents have the resources, support, and confidence they need. Practical Parenting from GBMC, available on WYPR.org, the mobile app, and wherever you get your podcasts.
A notable industry in Louisiana has been nearly shut out of the federal program it uses for migrant workers, and that has upended crawfish season. That story on the next All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered coming up this afternoon at 4 on WIPR at 88.1.
And welcome back to WYPR's Friday News Roundup. I'm Matt Bush, host and news director of WYPR's award-winning news team. We're going to be adding some more awards to that this weekend. Tune in next week to find out what they are. We've been talking about elections and elected officials today. Some elected officials in Maryland have recently turned their attention to one of the state's four HBCUs, Bowie State University. In November, Bowie was in the headlines. It received $50 million from philanthropist Mackenzie Scott. But this month, the school announced 79 layoffs, which include faculty. The news has students, faculty, and lawmakers asking what is going on. Ellie Wolf reported on this for our news partners, the Baltimore Banner, and she joins us on the line today. Ellie, welcome to the News Roundup.
Thank you for having me.
So, Ellie, Bowie State has similarities with other HBCUs like Morgan State and Coppin State here in the city or Howard in Washington, D.C., but there are some things unique to that school. Tell us what those are.
Yeah, so unlike Morgan State and Coppin State, which have both seen enrollment growth, Bowie State has seen pretty dramatic enrollment declines. They lost a total of 6% of their student body last year. It's the biggest drop in the university system of Maryland. And they've seen about a 27% drop in their first year class from 2022 until now.
So in many ways, this story seems like it's a math problem because, as we said last year, received a $50 million gift from Mackenzie Scott, the largest contribution in the school's 160 years. But now, according to the school's president, Aminta Breaux, they can't pay faculty. Breaux announced even tenured faculty may face layoffs in this round. How does the budget at a university like Bowie State work? And what did that $50 million it received, what was it spent on?
Yeah, so HBCUs across the country historically have lower endowments than predominantly white colleges. That's through really years of disinvestment. And so Bowie State, in President Breaux's tenure, has increased its endowment like 1,000% from $7 million to now it's, by the end of the summer, it'll be about $85 million, which is still significantly lower than a lot of schools' endowments, but it is something for an HBCU. So President Breaux is choosing to put most of the money given by Mackenzie Scott into the endowment. You know, I can't really say if that's the smartest decision or not. An endowment is typically thought of as a rainy day fund. Colleges, when they're in trouble, usually take more from their endowment. Faculty I've spoken to have said, you know, it's raining now, and they think that the president should use some of that money to help with the structural deficit that the university is facing.
Raises a lot of questions. But first, you mentioned Bowie State having this decline in enrollment at a time when a lot of other HBCUs are seeing an increase in their enrollment following the U.S. Supreme Court decision that effectively ended affirmative action in higher education. Any of your reporting touch on why Bowie's seeing a decline?
Yeah, it's not very clear, to be honest. You know, so the CFO gave a presentation in a town hall and said that of Bowie's, you know, 5,900 students, they've had to send 2,800 to collections. And so what faculty have said is that students often get really fabulous financial aid offers and packages from the university when they're admitted, but that those disappear after the first year, and that can lead to retention and enrollment issues.
Now, what are students saying about this latest round of layoffs there? As the reporting says 6,000 students were enrolled in the past year, but that's about 800 less than the prior year. And the school president says that means more than $5 million in lost tuition plus room and board and all that. What have students and alumni been saying to you?
So alumni have been extremely upset, flooding my inbox, really, with concerns about the university. This is the oldest HBCU in the state of Maryland, so it has a big presence in the state and really in the country in terms of kind of the HBCU alumni community. So what we're seeing is alumni are angry, they're upset, they're confused as to what's going on. The president says that the student experience won't change and that students won't be impacted by these cuts. But faculty have told me that, you know, they'll have to teach more students. There will be less help for them. And so the student experience will change. Classes will be bigger. There will be less classes offered. And another thing that the university's doing is merging and reorganizing some departments. So there are things that students are majoring in right now where, you know, in a year or two, they might not be able to major in those disciplines anymore.
Now, you mentioned that the school president, Bro, is putting much of the Mackenzie Scott gift into the school's endowment at Bowie State, growing it considerably. Now, a lot of universities, predominantly white universities, something like Harvard, for example, lean on their very weighty endowments. Harvard's is $56.9 billion, and that's with a B. Bowie's is $50 million, just a fraction of that. So what's the logic, I guess, of growing the endowment for a school like Bowie State?
Mm-hmm. So the endowment is going to continue to replenish itself, and universities take a percentage of their endowment each year and spend that on operating expenses. So to grow the endowment under Bro's term from $7 million to, you know, $85 million, that means that each year the university can take out more of that because it will replenish because it's invested. And it is considered often a rainy day fund. If a university is going through financial distress, it'll often draw more from its endowment, which, like I said before, has led faculty to question, why aren't you using some of the endowment money to fix some of the current financial issues? But President Bro has said that the financial issues are structural, meaning they can't just be fixed with a one-time infusion from the endowment. There need to be broader changes that will impact kind of the long-term financial sustainability of the university.
And what would those potentially be?
So it means cutting staff, which they have eliminated vacant positions, they have paused hiring, and they have laid off staff. The university is also forming what's called a retrenchment committee. Retrenchment is basically a fancy word for laying off tenure track and tenured professors, which is really, really rare and kind of dire. But the idea is that the university leadership say, there are less students right now, which means we need less faculty members. They want to right size for the number of students that are enrolled. And so that means reducing the operating expenses.
Now, Maryland state senators have been asking questions, too, as the state itself had a $1.5 billion budget deficit to fill for the coming fiscal year. Bowie State's funding as part of that is expected to fall by about 1%. That's not a huge drop, but there are also funds designated for HBCUs in Maryland that's expected to drop as well. There's been talk about Bowie combining with another school if this problem continues. Has that been something that's really been discussed, and did you hear anybody talking about that in your reporting?
From what I can tell right now, that's mainly a faculty-led rumor. There are HBCUs, even in the state of Maryland, like Coppin State, for example, has a smaller endowment and a smaller enrollment. There are other schools that I would say are more likely to identify potential mergers in the coming years. Bowie State still has a strong endowment, and it still is the second largest HBCU in the state out of the four. So I don't foresee anything like that happening, but I'm actually interviewing President Breaux later this afternoon, and I'm planning to ask her if that's something that's come up and if that's something that she's considering.
Was there any campus chatter about this? I said you said faculty, but was there anyone else talking about it? Just to put it in context a bit, Bowie is far from the only university right now facing financial struggles. NPR reporting about a quarter of nonprofit four-year colleges and universities in the U.S. are at risk of having to close or having to merge in the next 10 years. Was there any talk of this outside of that faculty movement that you mentioned?
Not that I've heard, no.
All right. Well, thank you, Ellie. Ellie Wolf is a reporter with our news partner at the Baltimore Banner. Check out her reporting. Sounds like she's going to have something great breaking after her interview this afternoon. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And that's it for WIPR's News Roundup this week. Next week, we're going to have a look at all the elections in Baltimore County. That's a really long ballot to go through. John Lee, our reporter, will be on there. We already talked about county executive, but then we just kind of scratched the surface there. Going to have more to talk about there because you have county council raises and including more county council raises in Baltimore County in this coming year because they're expanding the council by 2 members from 7 to 9. And then you have state's attorney there, too. Lots of other things to discuss there in Baltimore County. So what are your thoughts if you're a Baltimore County voter? What do you want to know about what's going on there? And we can bring that up next week with John. Give us a call at 410-735-1616. Again, that number is 410-735-1616. Want to hear from those voters in Baltimore County. And again, just to go over those voter deadlines with everyone again, June 2nd, that's Tuesday. If you want to request a mail-in ballot to vote that way, you got to do it by Tuesday. And if you are a registered voter and you want to change your party affiliation, you have to do it by Tuesday as well. Remember, you have to be a Democrat to vote in the Democratic primary and a Republican to vote in the Republican primary. So that deadline is on Tuesday. Stay with us with hearing all the news during Morning Edition and all things considered from our newsroom. We'll keep you updated on the latest election news. I'm Matt Bush, the news director here at WIPR. Elizabeth Nonnemaker helped us with production today. Shania Mapson and Sean Murphy are our studio engineers. Amy Walters is WIPR's executive producer. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you again next Friday.
Maryland's largest free outdoor concert series, WTMD's First Thursdays, returns to Canton Waterfront Park June 4th with fantastic tunes from New York's Fantastic Cats. Plus for Mississippi, Happy Landing, and Baltimore's Seven Teller.
What are the chances I would see you here tonight?
Add in local food and drink artisans and community organizations in the Vendor Village, made possible by CFG Bank and Baltimore Public Media. Find all details at WTMD.org.